The information in this skill is provided for informational and educational purposes only.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 62. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Sean Stewart from Southern California. Sean owns his own taxing business, and he has SMA Type 3. He is 50 years old, and we met last year at the CareSMA conference, so excited to have him here today. So, Sean, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Absolutely. Well, so Sean, to get you started, and I know, you know, we got to know each other a little bit last year, but I just kind of want to, and I just want to ask you, you can start off just telling us a little bit about, first, when you were diagnosed with SMA, and what it was like for you growing up with a disability.
Yeah, sure. I was diagnosed at the age of 3. My mom, I was her first child, and I wasn't progressing as well as my cousins were. So they decided to take me to the doctor, and they did several muscle biopsies. I think I had 4 or 5 done, and they were able to diagnose me with SMA type 3. And that was early on, back in 1973. I was able to walk until I was about 13 years old. And then at that point, I ended up falling and breaking my femur. After that, I was no longer able to walk. I was in a wheelchair from that time on. I went to junior high and high school in a wheelchair. Prior to that, I had a manual chair, but after that, I was in a power chair for up until now.
Sure. And that while you bring that up, you know, I've been having conversations with one of my coworkers about he's getting a new chair after having the same one for a long time, and it's been fascinating to talk with him because he's you probably know Michael, but like you know he's around your age, and it's been fascinating talking with him about just that, about like how chairs have evolved. Like I feel like I'm kind of spoiled because like I have always had permobiles and. Generation has never known anything different, but if you can think back to that, like, I mean, especially manual and even just the first power chairs, you got, what was it like, kind of like, because I know it's so many fewer accommodations than chairs today. Yeah.
The power chair was basically a manual chair with a pair of batteries in it and 2 motors, and that was it.
Yeah.
There was no seating. There was no, tilt, there was no recline, no feet elevators, none of that stuff. And the cushions weren't very good either. So, yeah, it was basically just a manual chair with a motor on it. And they were all Everson Jennings chairs, and they did not perform very well. I mean, you're fixing that chair maybe once a month or maybe more often than that. So, yeah, they were a lot different than they are now. The technology has advanced so much.
Sure.
I have a quantum chair now, and I love it.
You know,
it's so comfortable, much better than what I had previously. I probably had 10 or 15 different wheelchairs in my life.
Yeah.
I've had many, many different kinds, and they have progressed immensely in the last 10 to 20 years.
Sure. I mean, it's like going from, you know, just the manual one, and then that, you know, initial power chairs to, like, today, you know, I can connect my phone to my chair and charge and, like, and connect to USB devices and all that. It's crazy.
I would have never thought that was going to be possible.
Right. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing the technology they have in the chairs. And in the future, what will they do, you know?
There's
endless possibilities in how they could make chairs more user-friendly and, you know, do better things for people.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I want to get more, too, in a minute there about, like, accommodations you had or things you had to fight for, too. But before I get into that, what was your family like growing up, family life like? You know, I mean, have siblings? And if you want to talk about that for a minute.
Sure, I have one brother.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a small family, just me and my brother, my mom and dad. And we lived in Orange, the city of Orange, where I currently live. We moved here in 73. I was born in L.A. County, and then we moved to Orange, and we've been here ever since. I live here with my mom and my wife. My brother lives close by, but he's married and lives with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
But he was living here up until about 15 years ago. So we've lived in the same house for a long time. I have a lot of friends in the area, so I have a lot of people I know in the area. I haven't lived anywhere else, but just here in Orange. So yeah, this is where I've been.
Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, and I know it's cool to see, like, I mean, I've lived in North Carolina my whole life, and, you know, I think community and everything like that plays a big part in terms of, just growing up, and that's cool that you had that support system as well. So
I've been here forever. And when I met you last year, the Cure SMA conference was only 5 or 10 minutes from my house. So
that's great.
That was very convenient for me to go to.
That's great. Yeah, well, I definitely want to talk about that a little bit too, because I go to conference and everything.
That was awesome.
That's great. And so thinking too about, like, you know, what you just said about how chairs have evolved, and, you know, that was a big part of your independence. Thinking too about, like, the scope of disability rights and accommodations, how that's evolved over the years. What were your experiences like in school and in public, just when you were growing up, thinking back to, you know, when you were a kid or a teenager?
Sure. Back in elementary school, I was very lucky. I was able to go to a school that was brand new, and it was integrated with a lot of disabled students, but they had regular classes too. The only modified class I was in was physical education. The rest of the classes were all integrated, but it was a brand new school. Everything was wheelchair accessible, so it was very good for me. And they had a great physical therapy program there. So I was very fortunate to go there up until sixth grade. After that, I decided to... That school wasn't in the same city I lived in, though, so I had to commute by bus. Now, at grade 7, I decided to go to school in the city where I lived, and it was not... there was no other disabled students at that school or in wheelchairs. So I was the only one. But I had a lot of friends there that I knew from the neighborhood. That's why I wanted to go there. And they were very accommodating. Even though the school was old, it wasn't extremely accessible, but I made it work, and I was able to go there, and I enjoyed it. And same went for high school. I went to the high school in my city, and it's a very old school. They did the best they could to make everything accommodated for me. But it was, they had to modify things as we were going, because they had never had any wheelchair students before. So, but they did the best they could. And, I was glad to go there. I enjoyed it.
That's really cool. You know, I'd say, honestly, I'm surprised that, like, especially your elementary school had some of those accommodations. Cause, like, just in talking with people, like, not even, like, it that far above it, generations than mine, like, that was always the biggest struggle, is exactly what you said about, you know, they didn't know what to do and how to accommodate students with wheelchairs, and especially since the tools were not as developed, and the, you know, systems weren't as developed back then. That's really interesting that you had a really strong, a program, and can you talk a little bit, too, about you said the physical therapy program, like, when you're in elementary school.
That was the main reason I went to that school, for the physical therapy program they had. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I had physical therapy every day when I was there. And that's the main reason I went there. They had great physical therapy staff, and they had a lot of other students in wheelchairs. So they knew, you know, they had a lot of experience with giving physical therapy to us. And so, yeah, it was really great. And I felt very fortunate to go there.
That's really cool. I'm glad you had that experience.
Yeah. After that, I didn't do any physical therapy in school, which wasn't the best. But yeah, up until the end of sixth grade, I had physical therapy.
That's really cool. It was similar to me. Even I did it, you know, like, I remember doing, I was having this conversation with someone the other day. I did it, like, PT when I was younger. Not even, like, all the way through elementary school, but, like, early grade, when I had a lot more flexibility. I mean, I've always used a chair, but I had more, you know, that back when I was smaller and, like, could be transferred more easily. I would work with a PT at school and do, like, crawling exercises, that kind of thing. But I went a very long time without doing it, and didn't get back into any kind of PT until a few years ago when I started back with aquatic therapy, and now I do that regularly and I love it, but
I like that, it's huge,
it's something I look forward to, you know, every time. But that's great. Well, and another thing too about your school experience growing up, what were some of your interests or passions when you were a kid, teenager?
In school or, you know, just private, you know?
Just both, yeah. Just both, both in school and out. Like, what were some of your big things you were into?
In school, I was a big, you know, I loved math, so I always enjoyed doing math. I was very good at math. I had several accounting classes in high school, and I was also interested in music, and, you know, I was in band, actually, in 7th and 8th grade. I played clarinet.
Oh, nice.
However, the teacher didn't like me very well, so I stopped doing that. She probably didn't like the fact that I couldn't do the marching band, and that was their big thing then. So, but I did, I played pretty well, and I was in band for 2 years, and I enjoyed that. But like I said, I was always interested in math, and that's kind of how I got into going to business school, and then, you know, developing into having my own tax business. So that's kind of where that went. Also, I'm a huge sports fan. I love the Angels, and I used to like the Rams and go to many games. However, they moved and went to St. Louis. After they moved, I started following the Chargers. But yeah, I do go to a lot of sporting events, and I do go to a lot of concerts.
Very cool. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's now, great.
With the pandemic now, that kind of killed all that. But
I think we're all on that boat. When that
ends, I'll be looking forward to going back to that stuff.
You and me both. I mean, I'm not a sports guy, but like, I mean, I can't wait to get back to movie theaters and everything else. So Well, and I don't want to talk too much about the pandemic, but I do want to, like, I'll say in a little bit, just talk about kind of like how you've adjusted to that in the last few months, that's great. And well, and I think that's a perfect segue into talking about college and your early adult life. So, so you said, you know, you were always big into math and numbers, and that's ultimately what led to your tax business. But did you know it back then in college that, like, that was kind of the area you wanted to focus on, or did it kind of evolve, you know?
Well, I had several accounting classes in high school, so I knew I wanted to get into accounting. I started going to college. I started taking accounting classes, and I decided accounting may not be what I want to do. So I ended up slightly changing my major to finance. And I graduated from Cal State Fullerton in 1994 with a finance degree. After that, I decided I wanted to go into banking. I applied for several banking jobs, didn't get any of them. I ended up at a payroll tax service where I managed about 350 to 400 mid-sized businesses and did all of their payroll taxes. So, I enjoyed that. I worked in the office, and that was very good. I really learned a lot from that. And that's kind of what I did in college and my early career.
Very cool. And well, and also about college too. Thinking about that, like, and your initial transition. So what was kind of your plan out of high school? Did you know you wanted to go to, like, a four-year university, or did you want to try to live on campus? What was kind of the mindset back then for you?
Actually, I didn't want to live on campus. The school that I went to was maybe a 15-minute drive from my home. The only problem was commuting. Back then, bus service wasn't the greatest. However, there was accessible transportation, but it was – a lot of the lifts didn't work every day, and, you know, it just, some of that was difficult, but I was able to do that. So I commuted back and forth to school, and I knew I wanted to go to a four-year university. I didn't want to go to junior college, so I spent 5 years to get my bachelor's degree.
Nice. And what school did you go to?
I went to Cal State Fullerton in the city of Fullerton.
Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Right.
It's a very good business great. School.
That's great. And, you know, what was kind of that transition like, too? And just, I mean, I know, so you figure out that you commuted and all that, but what were some of the big things adjusting to on campus life and just the general of, like, you know, I mean, I also lived at home throughout my time in college, but I also, that's when I started hiring caregivers and, like, you know, and getting more independence because, you know, and another thing I think about is, like, when I was growing up, in school, I always had an aide with me. Whereas in college, yeah. I was on my own. I was fortunate enough to have note takers in class, but other than that, I was more on my own. So, what was that like too? That of that transition.
I was able to during college. I was able to pretty much be independent. I didn't need to have anyone go with me. Once I was ready to go in the morning, and usually in the mornings, it was my mom or my brother that would help me.
Okay.
I did have caregivers, but they would come in the evening and help me shower and get ready for bed and stuff like that. But in the mornings, my mom would help me, and I would do a lot of the getting ready on my own. When I was at school, I was there by myself. I was able to do everything by myself. If I did need assistance, the school that I attended had a very good disabled services center, and they would help me with whatever I needed. But I was able to take my own notes. I was able to get back and forth to class on my own. I was able to do all the testing with everyone else in the classes. So I was pretty lucky that I had the strength to be able to go to school on my own. Didn't require a lot of assistance during that time.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and I know, about, like, just from my experience, too, it's like once you get kind of adjusted to campus life, and a lot of times, like, if I needed something, students and faculty were always there to help as well. And, I mean,
yeah, me too.
The
only issue I had was sometimes getting my books out of my backpack and getting them back into my backpack. I couldn't reach that. But I would always make friends with somebody in the classroom, and they would always assist me with that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And also, during your college career, did you do any kind of extracurriculars or, like, Greek life or anything like that? You know, or anything
I did not.
Gotcha. I was just curious.
I tried to get into Greek life in the beginning, and I don't know. I didn't really get along with too many of the people there, so I decided not to do that. However, sure. I did attend a lot of concerts at school. They would have concerts every Wednesday during lunchtime.
Oh, nice.
And they would have some national touring acts come. And I saw No Doubt there. Social Distortion. There were some very big bands that would come, and I would do that. So I enjoyed doing that, and they had a lot of things going on campus, sporting activities and things like that. I would attend.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool.
It's a very big campus. There were about 25,000 to 30,000 students at that time.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
And before I move on to, like, post college life. That's the other thing I was curious about is, like, accessibility. Like, you know, I think about, like, the school I went to, it was kind of like half and half because it's an older university, and some of those older buildings were kind of a pain to get around. But at the same time, like, I was fortunate that the major I chose was in, like, a lot of the classes there were in a very modernized building, and I had no problem getting in and out of there. And so it was, like, really half and half. But what was it like for you in terms of accessibility getting around campus?
The school was very spread out, so I was lucky I had a power chair. Getting from one end of the campus to the other, maybe 15 minutes. So I was lucky in that aspect. But the school was pretty accessible. All the bathrooms were accessible. The all the big buildings had elevators, maybe more than one elevator, two or three elevators. So it was very accessible, and they had a very strong Disabled Student Services Center. And whenever there were any accessibility issues, they would be right on top of it. So I never really had too many accessibility issues that I can remember going to college, and I was lucky in that aspect. There was another school that I had contemplated going to right in the same city I live in, but it was very, very not very wheelchair accessible at all, and that's one of the reasons I decided not to go there.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. I'm glad you had that experience.
But this school was very, very big, and they had a lot of students in wheelchairs. So they were really very accessible and very accommodating, yes.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's awesome. And then thinking about post-college life, so what was kind of you did first? I mean, I know you talked a little bit about, you know, your work and everything, mm-hmm. but what was kind of the first steps, what you did right after you got your bachelor's?
Right after I got my bachelor's, I had back surgery. I had to have rods put in my back. My doctor was like, you better do this before you get any older. And I didn't want to do it during college. So as soon as I graduated, I think 6 months after I graduated, I had my back surgery done. And so that took 3 or 4 or 5 months out of my summer. And then by the following January, I started looking for a job.
Before I get into that, was your back surgery spinal fusion?
Yes, it was.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, well, that's fantastic. Is like I had mine, but it was in between 5th and 6th grade, so like I was
okay. Yeah, you were very young.
Yeah. But like, yeah. That's really interesting. I guess that's another thing. I'm always fascinated to talk about different people in the community about, because it's like I think for any adults, like whether. Mm-hmm. Anywhere from like our generations or anything like that, like it's a pretty common procedure, and like now it's becoming a little more obsolete, I think, because of treatments and stuff. But but I would get, like, was that the first time your doctor talked to you about that, or had you been?
No, he had talked to me about it previously, but I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. So I was kind of afraid. It's a big surgery, and I was still pretty, my back wasn't that bad before that. And he said, it's going to continue getting worse. And if you wait till you're older, it's going to be impossible. And it will affect your breathing eventually. So I was like, I better get this done. And so, but I waited till I was done with college. And then I did the back surgery. And then after that, I healed up pretty good. And I didn't have any setbacks after the surgery. And then I was able to get a job pretty much maybe 4 or 5 months after I had the back surgery done.
That's great. What was that mm-hmm. first job? Was it related to taxing, or was it something else?
Yeah, I worked for a payroll tax service, a large payroll tax service.
Okay.
And like I said, I had 300 or 400 medium-sized businesses that I took care of all their payroll tax needs. They would call me whenever they had a problem. But yeah, it was definitely related to my degree.
That's really cool. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And did you just continue working, or did you ever go back to school, or what was it like after that?
I worked at the payroll tax service for about 5 years, and then it became a little bit too hard for me. The transportation was an issue, and not having person to help me during the day at work, using the bathroom and things like that. So I decided to stop working there. And I went back to school and I learned web design and computers and things like that. I was already pretty good at computers, but I took some graphic design classes and web design classes. And I started doing web design on my own after I quit working from the payroll tax service, as well as doing taxes on my own. Yeah, so I started doing that. And I never got a degree or anything in web design, but I do have a lot of experience doing that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And well, and with that and utilizing those skills, was that you're planning to kind of transition to more working from home at that point?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've done that since I quit working at the payroll tax service.
Gotcha.
Working at home, doing web design and doing the taxes. I don't do too much web design now. I did up until about 5 years ago, but now I'm doing more. I just concentrate on my taxes, and I also do accounting at home.
That's really cool. And you said too earlier about like kind of your care routine in college. Was that kind of the same thing for a while, like well into your adult life, you having like your family help out and then having caregivers at night, or did that change? Just curious about that.
That changed dramatically, yeah.
Okay.
Since I require more care, I have currently I have three private caregivers. Two different caregivers come during the weekdays in the mornings, and I have one at night. And then I also have my wife and my mom that help me. So yeah, that changed dramatically. I require more care now, so I need more people. Yeah.
Sure.
Back in my younger days, I didn't have as much care that I needed.
Right.
I was more independent, so it was mainly family and my family and maybe a couple friends here and there.
Sure. And do you acquire your care through like agencies or like kind of any government programs, or do you just find on your own?
I do. I have IHSS, Home Supportive Services here in California, okay. A state-run program that is self-directed, and I'm able to get hours through that, and I pay for one of my caregivers through that and my mother. And then I have another agency that provides my caregivers during the mornings that is through a regional center.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they're all paid by the state. Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's something I'm always fascinated about because I know everyone does it differently, and it depends on where you live and what kind of services you can acquire. But
California is very good, and they have very good home care services.
That's great. That's great.
And it's very good. It's still expensive to pay for on your own. I don't know how people can manage if they don't.
Yeah.
If they don't use some of the state services.
Yeah, no, I use primarily state services, and then I do pay some of my own as well, but it's always an additional thing. Like, I don't know how, like, I know there are people who do it, but it's brutally expensive.
Very
expensive. On your own, yeah.
Yeah, I supplement some of my caregivers, but most of the funds come from the state.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get to your marriage in a little bit, but before we get there, I did want to talk about, so I know you've been on Spinraza for a while, and so, yeah, so if you can just talk a little bit about what that process has been like for you, and, especially because you talked about, progression and how, you got weaker over the years, and, what that's done for you, any changes you've noticed, that kind of thing.
Yeah, early on when Spinraza came out, I was very excited, of course, when I'm sure everybody else was that has SMA. I mean, I personally never thought there would ever be a treatment for SMA.
Yeah.
I was very surprised that it was FDA approved, but I was very encouraged. In the first year, I went to my neurologist. I said, hey, I want to get on this. And they gave me the runaround for 9 months. Probably due to the cost, and they just weren't familiar with it yet. So I ended up finding another doctor, and I was able to get a port placed in the back of my neck. That is a subcutaneous intrathecal catheter. And I had that done in January 2018. About a week or two after my surgery, I was able to get my first dose. I'm currently on dose 11. I'll be getting that in about 2 or 3 weeks. And I've seen a lot of improvement in my breathing, in my speech, and just my overall stamina. It's I can really tell the difference. Going towards the end of the 4-month cycle, I can feel like, oh, I'm really looking forward to the next one. So it definitely has made a big, big improvement in my stamina and my breathing.
That's great. Yeah, and I wonder that, too, about, it was, when it first came out, it was hard enough for any adults kind of getting, to try to get on it, but it's definitely improved a lot, but I think especially, it's, the older you are, they're like, well, no, we're not going to fund it, and, there's all the insurance hassles. I mean, I'm 26, and I started it when I was, 23, 24, and there was enough hassles there, so... And I'm glad to see that that's changing, that we're being more recognized and everything, because it, even if it doesn't do as, quote-unquote dramatic, effects for us, it's, it still is a big deal, and, just stopping the progression and giving
us... It is a big deal. If it can stop the progression, then it's 100% worth it.
Yeah.
If you get any gains, that's just icing on the cake, I think.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I've definitely seen some small improvements. nothing major, but I'll sure. take whatever I can get.
Sure. Mm-hmm, and definitely. Do you do it the standard, like, just spinal injection method? Because, like, I do mine through cervical injection, so I just wasn't sure. Yeah. Like,
it's basically, mine I do sitting up in my wheelchair, and I have a port placed in the back of my
head. Oh, that's right. You said you had a port. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And so they stick a needle in that port. It's painless. And I'm in and out of there usually within an hour and a half to 2 hours.
That's great. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really so awesome. Happy I got the port. The worst part of getting the port was the surgery.
Right.
And having a neck pain for three or four weeks.
Sure.
After that, I'm so happy I've had it done, and it makes the injection so easy.
That's great.
Yeah, definitely.
I know you had said that. For listeners out there, I'm like, it's Monday and I'm brain dead, so that's
like, no worries.
Yeah, but that's awesome. Well, that's really cool.
There is a video on YouTube with me and my doctor. His name is Dr. Mahoning.
Okay.
He talks about the port placement and just some of the improvements that some of his patients have seen.
That's really cool. I'll find it and like put it in when we post this. Put a link in.
That'd be great. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Sure.
Very cool. Well, there's been we've been on a lot of great topics here, and I definitely want to kind of cap off the conversation talking about your marriage. So
sure.
Yeah. So when I met you last year at the conference, you had just got married a few months after that. So if you can talk about how you and your wife met and, you know, your relationship, anything about that you want to share?
Sure. Well, in this day and age, I think most people are meeting online, and that's how we met. We actually met through Tinder. I wasn't looking to get married per se, but I was dating. I had dated somebody before her, didn't work out. And then we met, me and Maria, and we hit it off pretty well. We got married 3 months after we met. We've been married for about 9 months now. It's been very good. We're very happy together. She has two daughters who are 18 and 21. We all get along very well, and we like to watch movies together, go to concerts, and she likes to cook. I like to eat as much as I can. I don't eat too much by mouth, but I'm able to taste her food, and so she's a very good cook, and we get along very well, and we're very happy.
That's great, man. I'm just curious on that, like, did you start dating more later in life, or because you said you had that one previous relationship, but did, like, you wait till later in life to start dating, or just curious about that?
I actually didn't start dating until I was about 35 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, and I had a 2-year relationship back then. I've had a couple since then, but I've never been married previously until now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I did wait. I didn't date in college or in high school.
Gotcha. Yeah,
but I started, you know, after I stopped working and started doing the online dating thing, and it's difficult. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes it's depressing, and, you know, a lot of women aren't ready to go out with somebody in a wheelchair, but you just have to be persistent and have thick skin.
Sure.
There's always somebody out there for you, you know?
I mean,
people think, oh, I'm never going to meet anyone, but just got to keep trying, you know? There's always somebody out there.
Well, and that kind of answered my question on that, but I was going to ask if you had any other advice then for inter-abled couples or, you know, again, to someone with SMA who maybe has those doubts about, like, if they ever meet someone, like...
I think it's... Everybody can meet somebody. There's always somebody out there for you.
Yeah.
And with online dating, it makes it a lot easier than it did before online dating, before the internet. It's, you know, a lot easier to meet people now, so just got to keep trying, you know.
That's awesome, man.
Don't give up after the first one says no or whatever, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Time is of the patience and everything, so absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome. Well, no, that's great, Sean, and I guess just to wrap up here, and congrats on your marriage, too. I know I said it before we started recording, but that's really awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Well, and on that note, too, if you have any other advice for anyone with SMA in general, and then also, if you can just talk a little bit about, especially now, you know, with all the changes in your life last year, getting married, and of course, the pandemic and all this, too, it's kind of, but what does, like, a typical day of the week look like for you, and like the ins and outs of your daily life?
Usually I get up maybe 8-9 o'clock in the morning. My caregiver comes. I'll do the shower and get dressed and all that. I hang out with my wife in the morning, and then I'll start my day on the computer doing taxes or whatever I'm doing that day. Spend time with my wife and my mom, and then usually my wife sleeps later in the day and then goes to work. She works the night shift. So, okay. During the later part of the day, she's sleeping, and then I'll be on the computer doing work. And, if it wasn't for the pandemic, I'd be going out more to Angel games or to, movie or to a concert here or there. But, that's basically what I do. I work from home, so I stay home most of the time, but I do like to go out a lot, too. Most of the time I'm here at home.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think we've all definitely had to adjust the past few months, and we're all ready to get back out more.
I can't wait till it's over.
Absolutely. I'm in the same boat.
For sure.
Well, Sean, this was a fantastic conversation, and just to cap things off, do you have, like, I know you shared advice about, inter-able couples, but is there anything else you'd like to say to anyone with SMA out there, or anyone in the community about, growing up with a disability, living independently, anything like that, any bits of advice you want to share?
I would say, with SMA in particular, it's very, the future is bright with all the treatments. And if it had been like this when I was younger, my disability would not have progressed as much as it has. However, with a younger person with SMA now, they have a lot more access to treatments. It's going to make life much easier for those people, and I'm so grateful for that. But I would say, anything's possible, and there's so much technology and treatment that living with a disability is it's going to be easier than it used to be, for sure. And I'm happy for that fact.
That's awesome. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Sean, thanks again. This was a great conversation. And before we go too, I want to remind listeners out there that, August is SMA Awareness Month, and we are doing an initiative called 31 Days of SMA again. This is a project where every day in the month of August, we're going to feature a different person from the SMA community. So both people with SMA, parents and caregivers, spouses, many more. So I've already got a lot of stories and contributors lined up. But if you would like to share your story, we have information on our Instagram page and our forums about that. So do hit me up. You can email me at kevin@bionewsservices.com, and I'll send you all the information. But we would love to have a really diverse range of contributors for this, and so to tell stories just like Sean did and told his, and so we want to get a lot of those stories throughout August, and I'm really excited for it. So just wanted to put that out there. But Sean, thanks again for joining us. And
thank you.
Absolutely. And I look forward to seeing you again once all this is over and we can actually meet in person once more.
Yeah, definitely. I would have been in Florida at the Cure SMA conference this year.
Yeah.
You know what happened to that. So.
Yep, I would have as well. But yeah. I know we're doing some virtual stuff, which is a good alternative. But, I'm in the same boat. I'm definitely ready to, see everyone again in person. So
hopefully
2021 we'll be on track. But
okay, I hope so.
Awesome. Well, Sean, thanks again. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories like this, again, by following us on social media, subscribing to this podcast, and also joining us on our forums page. You can find all of that information on our main website at smanewstoday.com, so be sure to follow us. And to everyone out there, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.